Ladies, gentlemen, friends outside the binary, the Bakun. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hey, gang. Welcome to episode 308 of Motorsport 101. I am your friendly neighbourhood host, Dre Harrison, and let me just say on the record that my choice of attire for this week's episode has absolutely nothing to do with, one, the result at Baku this past weekend, or two, the fact I wore a Ferrari shirt last week.
Oh, same.
Yeah, nothing. This is purely coincidental.
No, actually, I really love the synergy here between the two opposing corners of the show. We have the modern and the classic for Team Silverstone.
There's always money in nostalgia. There's always money in nostalgia here on this show. And to be fair, me and RJ, we own the exact same t-shirt and one of us had to change. So, so what happens when you show up to these high-class events. But hey, gang, Dre here. Good to see you. With me as always, RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
Oh, anyone got a spare million and a quarter so I can buy that Schumacher car? I need a new daily driver. Yeah, Michael Schumacher's Jordan.
I have $3.
Now on sale. Probably going to be sold by the time this episode comes out. But yes, Motorsport 101 is here to reaffirm our commitment to hashtag build back greener. Pink tinted windows.
Yes, I'm here for this. I approve of this. I'm going to rebuild this church brick by painful brick. Because we back, baby. We want to let the people know that we back up. And it is a glorious time to be a church pastor again. Isn't that right, Ryan King?
Oh, man. I'm holding out zero faith. Let's ignore Miguel Oliveira for a second. No faith.
Wow. Yeah, I know KTM's kind of had a rough start to the year, but I didn't know they hurt that bad.
He's denounced the prodigal son, the man that's won them 3 Grand Prix in the last year and a half. How dare you denounce our patron dentist son, Miguel Oliveira? King, I'm disappointed in you. Is it the Knicks, King? Is that it? Is that it?
Yes, it is the Knicks.
You know, Dre, given the events of the last week, the only person who's allowed to talk shit in basketball circles right now is RJ.
I know! He's the last man standing!
Look! My Hawks fandom is just a bit! Also, in defense of King, you know, if you follow professional wrestling, you will know that Miguel Oliveira is not the dentist who is crowned champion at this point. Miguel Oliveira has got a lot of catching up to before he even gets into Britt Baker's stratosphere.
Yes, Pittsburgh's favorite dentist.
Oh, for God's sake.
Dirtiest.
I didn't know that was a list, honestly. But here we are.
King, awesome. King, before we introduce Cam, how would you say dentist in Yinzer?
I'm not sure. Though I should point out, congratulations to Coach Thibodeau for being recognized by the association as Coach of the Year. And also
Derek Rose got one MVP vote.
Yes. There are 100 votes for NBA MVP. 99 are given to members of the media to vote, and one is given by the fans. And the fans voted for Derrick Rose.
The fans are a very strange set of people. I think you should take their rights away.
Do they only give the vote to fans with knee problems?
Oh my god.
I say this as a massive Derrick Rose fan.
I know. I don't get it either. But yeah, somehow RJ's the last playoff team standing. Everybody else in here is miserable, and that includes Cam Buckley. Hello, sir.
Hi, everyone. You know, I may be miserable about the Celtics, but you know that Nürburgring, not really 24 hours, because we had a whole lot of fog. And, you know, seven wins and 15 attempts, and we sip in that BMW pack. Oh. vengeance for 2020. Fuck you, COVID.
My Porsche man is out here literally feeling himself right now as we speak. We have Hennessy, we have...
Oh, no. No, this case, I'm doing a little tribute to a supporter of the show, Tony. Got a little Captain Morgan, a little spice rum.
Oh, Captain.
No, the Hennessy reserves all got dumped in the river after the Celtics got annihilated.
Ah, that's fair.
You know, I had the experience of watching the Celtics get bounced in a Boston sports bar with a bunch of people who don't even follow sports that closely. It's just like, this is going to be an interesting time watching them get 20 balled out of the playoffs.
All I'm saying is the way the Bucks are playing as we speak, the Celtics look pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Respectable.
And that first drink was celebratory. Now this is one to dull the pain.
he's balancing the accounts, you see.
Look how tiny Joel Embiid makes Triple H look tiny. That's my other basketball observation. Dre, what are we talking about today?
We got a loaded show with us on this one here, folks. We'll be talking Formula One and an Azerbaijan Grand Prix that started pretty tame and then suddenly it wasn't. A whole heap of drama in the second half of this one, involving two tyre blowouts, a shock podium for the ages, Sergio Perez winning in Baku, and something called a magic button. No, seriously, it was called the magic button.
It made all of those points magically disappear.
I know! Like, we'll talk about Lewis Hamilton's greatest magic trick later on in the show. We'll also talk about MotoGP in Catalonia because, oh lord. I almost feel bad for Miguel Oliveira. He won a Grand Prix and no one talked about it because all the talk was about Fabio Quartararo's chest. No,
we're not kidding.
You're gonna have to listen to the full show. You gotta listen to the full show for context on this one, but let's just say someone's levers exploded and it didn't go down well. It's a strange one. You'll have to hear us out on this one. But the Catalan Grand Prix was wild in every sense of the term. We'll get into all of that over the next hour or so. But in the meantime, places you can find us are on youtube.com/motorsport101. If you're watching us on there, hi! Welcome. Glad you could join us. Leave a like, hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Big shout out to our man Tomo for plugging us up because I happened to be on his channel last week. So there's a bunch of new guys watching. Hi! Hope you enjoyed the show.
New friends!
New friends, enjoy. Come along and enjoy. Apparently Cam's supplying the drinks. Facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter, motorsport_101. And our personal handles are on the screen right now. But if not, if you're listening on audio, they're at Harrison101HD, at CBuckley917, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. You can follow us all on there. We're on Instagram as well, at motorsport101pod. For all that good stuff as well, updates, clips, all that good stuff. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all the audio editions of the show. You can upgrade to $10 for the video versions as well as getting access to the Supporters Club of our Discord server where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. So, without further ado, let's get into the Azerbaijan Grand Prix.
So another year, another Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Baku welcoming us all. And the championship definitely not going to be decided by what happened today. And if it did, it was way too close for comfort.
In Azerbaijan.
Yeah, as both contenders for the championship had a rough day. Where Verstappen did make it to the end of the race because he had a left rear tire failure down the front straight at almost 200 miles an hour. And it was alongside another high speed tire failure for Lance Stroll over at Aston Martin. A lot of questions were raised about the Pirellis. Though it seemed like it was going to be an open goal for Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes, the race went down to a two-lap sprint to the finish with a standing restart, and it seemed like this is Lewis's opportunity for the race, but surprise, surprise, it was rigged from the start. Lining up for the restart, Lewis accidentally hit a button on a steering wheel. Nope. That
is not what happened. He switched that off, and then after the start, he hit it again during the upshift.
He hit
it between the start and going down to turn one.
Yeah, and he hit this button, which has been colloquially referred to as the magic button, which drastically shifts the brake bias of the car. Doing so meant that when he tried to dive bomb for the lead in turn one, he locked up instantaneously and then just shot off into the runoff and ended up being the last car running on the road. But you'd think, oh, maybe the constructors, Mercedes, will pick up a bunch of points from that. No, Valtteri Bottas was uncompetitive for most of the race and finished 12th. So, who had the worst weekend, Hamilton or Verstappen?
I'm gonna take a punt and say yes.
I set that one up, didn't I, when I wrote that, right?
Oh, man. Both of them looked like they could potentially win this race the way the circumstances throughout the weekend played out. Both of them walk away with a goose egg. Verstappen's...
I was going to say...
Go ahead, Dre.
No, I was going to say, I think it's Hamilton. It's one thing for Verstappen to have a freakish tire blowout when he was leading the race. That's obviously a brutal bit of luck. Pirelli is still looking into the exact reasons why. We'll get into that next. But Hamilton missed an open goal. People don't talk about it as much. Yeah, like, people didn't notice this so much on the restart, but Perez's launch off the grid for the standing restart was awful.
Yeah, like, Lewis had the lead. It was done. Lewis had the lead.
Lewis had it. Going into turn one, he had the inside line and he had his car alongside. You'd think surely Hamilton would have taken the lead instead. As mentioned, he hit the magic switch. He basically had no rear brakes. He suits off into the slip road, and Mark Webber is basically seen cackling like a rooster in the background if you watched on Channel 4's
coverage. Let's put a number on this. The normal brake bias settings for race conditions for Lewis Hamilton's car, 51% to the front. The magic button pushed this, appears to be 86.5% to the front.
Ooh, that's a lot at the front.
And this had the predictable effect of basically shutting off his rear brakes and all of his MGUK regen, and he just flew off into the runoff. And
Hamilton had an open goal to steal a win in a car that, as we kind of established in Monaco, does not work on street circuits.
No,
this is a faster street circuit than Monaco is, but Mercedes were not expected to do well. And Hamilton somehow worked his way in position to win.
This was weird because we talk about how Mercedes often gets their bad rounds out of the way early and kind of get into their stride. This was another one of those weekends where Mercedes didn't have a particularly quick car. They went with a very extreme setup for Lewis to try and get him up the grid, and sacrificed Valtteri Bottas as a toe in qualifying to get him P2. Just had him slipstreaming all the way down the front straight. But Red Bull had the quicker car fundamentally this weekend, and it wasn't even close. Hamilton could hang on to Perez's coattails, we'll get to him later, but he couldn't make a move. With Verstappen out, and Perez vulnerable due to a, at the time, unforeseen car issue, which helped trigger his poor start, this is one of those weekends where you think, okay, Mercedes didn't have the fastest car, but they're going to walk away with more points because Lewis is the more consistent driver with the more consistent team, and they win their championships on their worst days. And then Lewis fat-fingered it and flew off into the runoff and converted 25 points to zero. It just doesn't happen that often. Yet it's arguably happened two weekends in a row. where Bottas was going
to... Two bad Hamilton weekends in a row, and he was lucky to get away with Imola.
Yeah, he got away with Imola. Monaco, he was nowhere. Here, he, as far as I'm concerned, put in a champion's drive up to that point. But a very small mistake with catastrophic consequences. And the point I was getting to was last week at Monaco, it was throwing away points with Bottas with the blown pit stop. The world's longest right front tire change. This week...
Finally got it off!
Oh my god. And this week, it was Lewis making a very uncharacteristic mistake under pressure.
Ugh.
And we haven't really talked about it.
And yet...
Verstappen didn't put a foot wrong. He was perfect up until the point where his left rear tire decided to clock out early.
And colossally, that's Mansell. Mm. Kind of.
Yeah, jeez. That was it. Better part of 320 clicks, and luckily he got out and walked away. Very, very lucky on that one. Yeah, Verstappen had a real... Verstappen had a real chance to put some serious damage into that championship lead, another major blow, but effectively he's got away with
they
one.
Both
he's
dodged,
probably the net winner here. Because
they both dodged nukes from each other, because it looked like it was going to be big points for Red Bull. And then big points for Mercedes, and then no points for either of the two championship contenders.
Nobody wins! Yeah.
Well, Verstappen wins, because it's one less round for Hamilton to make up the points.
Yeah, but it's one...
Like, that's what you gotta look at it as.
Yeah, but it's one more where Red Bull cleanly had a quicker car.
Yeah, that's also true, but even in this case, a zero is still a positive in this case, because right now, Mercs are clearly on the back foot. That's how I look at it anyway.
It's a weird thing to say, isn't it?
Sometimes no news is good news. And, in terms of the constructors, it's still
it's
massive
good news
win
for
Red Bull, because they still left plus 25 on Mercedes, which is massive.
More on that later.
For two weekends in a row. No, like I said, if well, the worst part about it was, I don't know if you listened to the radio messages, but then Hamilton was in his car telling the boys... It's a marathon, boys. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Yeets it into turn one.
It's one of those things. I'm not gonna beat him up over it. It's just...
No.
Lewis will often make... He will make his mistakes usually when there's so little pressure that he kind of disengages. This was a very, very small thing that blew up in his face. It happens.
That's the beauty and the horror of F1 sometimes, I suppose, right? So, we talk about every marginal gain being important, and a very, very marginal mistake that, you would never think about in a million years cost a man a Grand Prix win, and a critical one. That one that would have put him back in the lead of the Drivers' Championship comfortably. Yeah, would have been a massive swing, and instead Verstappen's gotten out of jail free, essentially. Speaking of Verstappen's weekend, you got to talk about the blowout itself. He had two, as King alluded to at the top of the segment, Lance Stroll and Max Verstappen, very almost carbon copy incidents. Left rear just explodes at the better part of 200 miles an hour, both on Baku's front straight. Pirelli are investigating this as we go. They also found a cut on the left rear of Hamilton's tyre as well. How much, guys, do you think Pirelli has to answer for this one? Because at face value, it's not a good look for them at all.
Yeah, it looks like the popular theory is that Pirelli just hires nothing but people who don't know how to make tires as part of some long, elaborate, sick joke on the motorsport community.
Yeah, Pirelli's initial findings, they feel that it's most likely debris, but again, they're investigating.
We know it wasn't, quote, excessive wear, because there was still tread on the tires, there was still tread depth, it wasn't that they wore to the canvas. My concern, and me, a armchair expert who doesn't really know much of anything, I've watched a lot of racing in a lot of different series. And it concerns me that rather than just a puncture, these were two outright delaminations where the carcass separates from the sidewall, basically instantly, and launches the car into the wall. That's...
And for Sappet's case, he had he missed a really awkward hit against the
That could have been a horrendous in the wall. Crash. Thankfully, nosed it in. No major harm done to either driver.
And we get a good meme out of it too, with Verstappen kicking his car and experience Azerbaijan in the background. Which that's pretty much the picture of this race.
If it is debris, fair enough. Debris cuts down tires. It's how tires work. It concerns me that the tires failed so completely structurally that they just launched the car straight into a wall.
And it's another case where Pirelli's in the news, but not for the right reasons. And that's... Pirelli, you shouldn't be in the news as a sole tire supplier in Formula One, or in any sport for that matter, because in WRC, we had a complaint that somebody's tires believed it was Mads Osberg, who said that his Pirelli tires were getting chewed up, and that's an entirely different discipline. Ironically, the tires they use in GT World Challenge, they're like hardtack.
The other thing is, and I think it's the reason why I am somewhat skeptical, the tires effectively failed at the same part of the track, the same corner of the car, with the same mileage on them. About 29 laps, I believe, for Verstappen, on a green flag running because there was some safety car. 30 laps for Stroll. And during the weekend, Pirelli made major mandated adjustments to pressures and camber on the rear of the car due to concerns about the tire durability.
They did, yeah.
So I'm going to reserve judgment, but debris kind of seems like the easy way out when... Unless it's a pretty big, sharp piece of debris that we can clearly see just wipes the tire out. Sorry, Valtteri, a couple years ago. Pirelli clearly had concerns about the tires and adjusted them. And the only person who got to the recommended life on the hards of 40 laps ended up being Lando Norris.
I was going to say, the whole thing is strange because Pirelli also said initially to launch their investigation that when it comes to loads being bad on the tires, it's actually the right rear that gets it worse than the left one at Baku. So it makes it even weirder that we had two almost identical blowouts.
Even that, they both failed on a straight.
Which is even weirder.
A straight with some curves in it, but full throttle, not a lot of load going through the tires in terms of vertical loading, but load as far as speed and centrifugal force, some of the highest on the F1 calendar.
Yeah, I just bizarre. All of it is bizarre. And I don't envy Pirelli because their goodwill with the audience is already kind of run out.
It ran out before we got to Silverstone 2013. Let's be real.
It ran out 10 years ago, three races into their tenure as a supplier.
Yeah, and when Pirelli made their thread explaining what was going to happen, a very prominent fellow YouTuber and podcast host was like, "Or you could just admit there was a problem with the tire." And I'm just like, oh, here we go. It's because it's just like, people don't buy Pirelli shit anymore. Because that tweet got over 3,000 likes, and I was just like, I just rolled my eyes, because Pirelli are never going to win that fight.
There was exactly one good chirp from the Peanut Gallery, and that was Alex Pillow's tweet, "Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone."
He is looking up at the sky and screaming at the racing gods to give him a tire failure later this year.
It's just not a good look.
Any time that you have a driver out in the lead of a race and they are launched into a high speed crash through no fault of their own, people aren't going to be happy about it.
Yeah, they would have been even more unhappy had Hamilton gone up and then win on this race, because that sucks.
Oh God, you had the
two tire failures, but if one of them causes major
hateful
championship
fan bases shaking hands.
Oh God. a common goal, a mutual disdain of Pirelli. It's like, oh, that's you don't want that. That's like an evil version of the Mega Powers colliding. You don't want that shit. Speaking of you don't want that shit, and I want to go to King first this one because he's got a long history of judging Valtteri Bottas on this podcast. Oh dear. Another one that was quite quickly pointed out on the internet was Valtteri Bottas' very, very uncompetitive day and finishing in 12th. And also the clip that went viral from F1 TV of him falling down the order on that final restart and dropping out.
No, that was at the start of the race.
Was the start of the race? Okay, my. Yeah, just he lost, I think it was like 4 places in 6 corners. It was brutal to watch. King, how much of that blowback was justified? Because on the face of it, 12th for Bottas is ugly.
Yeah, when you're in the reigning constructors winning car and you're not even scoring points. Like, I'd take any points at this point. Like, when you're not taking any points home, it's not good. It's not good.
We'll get to it with our next subject for another number 2 driver in a top team. Valtteri Bottas is now costing Mercedes the World Constructors' Championship. That's where it begins and ends right now, because when Mercedes had 7/10 a lap on the field, Bottas could put in 5 stinkers a year and more or less be okay. Now, when he's that far off of Lewis, he's in the midfield and he can't overtake. And someone had raised the point, they were running different setups this weekend to try and just throw anything to the wall and see what stuck to wake the W12 up around here. Why do you think they used Bottas as a sacrificial lamb in qualifying? Because they knew Lewis was their only shot. And it set him up for an awful race. He was even worse when he was very timid on lap 1. And to cap it all off, a day that looked like he was going to be scoring fringe points at best, was then destroyed when he pitted right after Verstappen had crashed due to his tire failure, only for them to throw a red flag for everyone to change their tires.
Yeah.
Which cost him any track position he
had. Could have saved him.
And it's just, it's a bad look when Lewis can cope with extreme setups, because he's just that damn talented. He can run a setup on a car that Valtteri just can't. Lewis can live.
It's got me thinking, like, man, I miss Williams Valtteri.
Inherently right now, the Mercedes it's not slow. What's been claimed from it this year is its operating window. The nigh on infinite operating window that its 2 predecessors had. Now it's a temperamental car. It has trouble getting heat into its tires. It has fundamental rear stability problems, but it's still brutally quick if you can get a handle on it. Valtteri just can't right now.
I said this on my Substack page earlier in the week, and I'll repeat what I said there. A part of me feels sorry for him. And a part of me feels sorry for him because narratives can change so quickly in this sport. And I mentioned 3 rounds ago, after Catalunya, he was plus 15 on Sergio Perez, and that was fine in the grand scheme of things. That's not a problem. That's Bottas holding up his end of the deal on the constructor standpoint. What's happened since then? A dodgy wheel nut in a race where Perez climbed from 9th to 4th.
Which wasn't his fault.
And now,
let's make that clear.
Again, not his fault, to make that clear. Not really. I mean, you'd have to be ultra harsh to pin any of that on
him.
And then a massive swing in Baku where he was uncompetitive, and of course Sergio Perez wins his first race for Red Bull, and 2 rounds later he's minus 22 to Sergio Perez. It doesn't tell the full story, and again, like, people will read the scoreboard and go, well, Bottas has been terrible. Well, Bottas was fine until 2 rounds ago, and it's the nature of his 2 bad rounds for the year were 2 rounds where he was actually needed. And it couldn't have gone worse around him if it looked... It couldn't have looked worse if it tried.
No.
Imola, he was uncompetitive and was about to be passed by George Russell, and if anything, got a reprieve from people because Russell accidentally T-boned him. And then now at this race, he was uncompetitive. And of course, Perez wins, and now the scoreboard looks horribly against him.
But the problem is, he doesn't even need to be. He doesn't need to be Nico Rosberg, right? And he's not going to be.
No, he doesn't.
But
no,
he's not even being Eddie Irvine. He's not even being Mark Webber. He needs
no.
He needs to be mid-table points at a minimum, because if Perez has acclimated to the Red Bull, and two tracks where you need confidence in your car, Perez has looked the best he has so far. If this is the trend going forward, Mercedes are screwed. They're not going to win the Constructors. Yeah. They might eke out the Drivers' Championship, depending on how things play out with Lewis and Max. They will not win the Constructors if Bottas is third one weekend and 12th the next.
We'll have to wait and see. I mean, it's still too early to say. We were raising eyebrows at Perez after Spain, so of course he has his two best rounds of the season straight afterwards. If anything, I thought it was quite funny that Perez said, "Hey, give me 5 races to get used to this car. Race number 6, he wins." So, of course...
he held up his word.
Every narrative that could go against Valtteri hit him all at the same time at Baku. It was brutal. And that's why I said I felt a little bit bad for him, because the numbers don't tell the full story. 3 out of his first 4 races were him finishing 3rd, and that was fine. And that's why I said I think the pass score for Valtteri is now 2nd, and I don't think he's capable of that in the context of the field right now. RJ, yeah.
I want to tie a bow on this because I thought about it. I could go on about potential Constructors Championship implications, whether or not Mercedes will replace Valtteri after the season or even mid-season. And then I listened to the latest episode of Shutdown Fullcast, and Spencer Hall put it perfectly. Terry Boat-ass, he's just vibing. He's just out for a leisurely cruise. And then what happened? He finishes ahead of Lewis Hamilton, and he finishes ahead of Max Verstappen. The moral of the story here? Never try. It's a lesson. It's a lesson and a virtue that can be bestowed upon us all.
I'll drink to that. I'll drink to that indeed. Speaking of drinking, which I somehow didn't take up after this result, should we talk about the positive side of the weekend and that podium?
We shall.
Good idea. So, in case you didn't get the news already, Sergio Perez won. You may have seen that. It was a wild one. Took full advantage of a fallen teammate and a struggling Hamilton to take his first win in Red Bull purple. The first man to actually win under 2 different manufacturers in this era, believe
it or not. That's incredible.
It's kind of, a man who was winless 8 rounds ago.
Because, of course.
This sport doesn't make any sense sometimes, but, oh man, crazy, crazy stuff. But behind that, Sebastian Vettel,
from 11th to 2nd. Rebuild that shirt.
Podium in the back.
Oh, it was beautiful. Well, more on that in a second. But also, we had Pierre Gasly as well finish 3rd for AlphaTauri. Their best result of the year so far. Holding off Charles Leclerc in a crippled AlphaTauri at the end of the Grand Prix to take the podium finish. It was an incredible finish. It was a incredible bit of drama. The drivers seemed to like it, actually. Fernando Alonso quite jokingly said, and this is a man who gained 4 places on the final 2 laps to finish in 6th from 10th on the standing restart, said, quote, "We need to think about many 2-lap races, 25 2-lap races or something like that on Sunday." Old man Nando still got it off the line, most definitely. And quotes, "Everybody goes for everything and tries to make up as many positions as they can in a very short time. I didn't see the replay of the last 2 laps, but I must say on my side, it was very intense. I really enjoyed it. Hopefully in the future they will do the same." How friggin' hype was that podium, fellas? My word!
Look, this was perfect. There were a net 0 championship implications either
way. No, we need to talk about Sergio Perez's championship implications with his nice 69 points.
Nice. Sergio, I'm sorry. You can't score any more points for the rest of the year. Throw the rest of the season. like, just say, you know what, let put Alex in the car for the rest of the year.
See, here's, here's what's not about to happen.
Dude, Sergio Perez could have been run out of Formula One at the end of his one terrible year at McLaren. Like, there was talk that he could be shuffled off to IndyCar after just three seasons at F1. And now in year 11, he's a two-time Grand Prix winner, and he's a Red Bull winner in just his sixth race with the team. That's awesome!
He's as good as he has ever looked. Look, and he didn't just inherit this win, either. Although he did. He was on... Despite a somewhat of a subpar qualifying because of how the red flags worked out, he had the pace. He was fast enough to follow in Verstappen's tire tracks, to overcut Hamilton despite his own dodgy pit stop, and then hold him off. Perez was on Verstappen's pace for 90% of their time together this weekend. Sometimes he was faster.
And that's ultimately why they made that move. Like, I lament the fact that, like, Pierre and Alex couldn't ever drive like that when they were at Red Bull. But that's water under the bridge now. And in one case, like, hey, it didn't work out all... It's not all too bad for Pierre at that other team. We'll get to it in a bit. But, man, Sergio Perez is really, really impressing at Red Bull now. I'm so happy that he's finally a competitor. He's got more wins than the brothers Rodriguez in Formula One, which... surprises me.
And first Red Bull winner that wasn't Max Verstappen since 2018.
Daniel Ricciardo or Monaco.
Oh, Danny Rick.
God. Oh, another time where a guy won having to nurse a crippled car.
And did this. Amazing. Did this with a hydraulic issue, which was slowly killing his car. It's why he had a poor restart. They were scared that working the power steering too much, which is hydraulic on these cars, would cause a pressure loss and have them to retire the car. Although,
they told him to stop the car on the first corner of the cooldown lap. If that race had been one lap shorter, it may have set up victory for the second place.
And, side note, thank goodness Perez didn't jump Hamilton at that restart, because if he's ahead going into turn one and Hamilton still hits that button, oh dear God!
Oh no, no, no. A repeat of another 2018 moment involving a Red Bull.
Dre,
you don't want that.
The floor is yours.
No, but let's fucking go. Yes.
Come on. We're on that crack again.
Oh, like I described it on Discord the night after the Grand Prix, and I said to the guys that were listening in on our supporters club, I said, you ever remember the days of the UFC when Chuck Liddell would win and he would just go arms out like this, running backwards over the cage? That was me in my bookies, because I was watching the race at work, and I literally screamed at the top of my lungs, let's go on the phone to my brother, who is also a Sebastian Vettel fan in the background. It was glorious.
Rebuild this church. Put some respect on this church.
Oh, I honestly, it was just like, as a Vettel fan, of course, the last 2 years have been tricky, to say the least. Had to ask serious questions about the man's ability, about what he was doing in that Ferrari camp, and you know, it's not been a great time. And the last two rounds, I mean, he drove superbly at Monaco, was driver of the day there. You know, was excellent there. And then this didn't feel like a fluke.
No,
he earned that second place. He clawed his way up the
field. Before the shenanigans, he was going to be P4.
Yeah, he was running fourth on merit. He was running the leader's pace on his alternate strategy. Of course, his tyres are a little bit fresher than everyone else. That's because he went long
fantastic.
On the soft stint at the start.
Yeah,
he went 17 laps on the softs.
We know Vettel's great on his tyres. And
yeah, and
he wielded that to... He looked like Sebastian Vettel.
He looked like the Sebastian Vettel of old. He looked like the Sebastian Vettel that 10 years ago, nobody could stand this dude. But now, in the twilight of his career, with a plucky underdog British manufacturer securing their first ever Formula One podium, or their first since, you know, that time Racing Point scored their last podium.
Look, this is a Team Silverstone that looked more like last year's Team Silverstone. Because Stroll was on for a good result before his inevitable tire failure. But this looked like the Sebastian Vettel that is the tire whisperer, the relentless driver that we saw smash out four world championships on everyone's head. He looks comfortable in the car. Car still isn't particularly fast, but just give Vettel something that he is comfortable in. And there's really, there's maybe one person on planet Earth who's faster. And even just his swagger when he got out of the car, he looks happy. He looks comfortable. He looks like he's enjoying Formula One, which is more than I think we've been able to say in the last two and a half years.
The hairline's coming back in, too. I'm sure of it. It was Aster in preseason testing.
I like how post-race, in the pit lane, he looked over at Binotto and yelled, "Grazie." Go off, my son. Go off.
Man, I'll tell you what. Beautiful. It was Aster in preseason testing. Has Sebastian Vettel actually forgotten how to drive fast? I'll tell you, reader.
Ooh. No, he has not forgotten. Awesome. I don't think he forgot how to drive fast. He certainly is shitting and forgot how to drive clever. And I'll tell you
that particular Jalopnik rider is currently having a bad opinion about something else.
Getting roasted is getting posted. Thanks, Machiavelli.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. No, like I said, it's and you know what's funny about it as well is, like, given that the man's prime had him universally cast as the villain of this sport, to see the fact that nearly half the goddamn paddock was celebrating with him on that one, getting, like, fist bumps and arm shakes from Norris and Leclerc and Alonso and Perez after the race, it's like, how has he become the most universally liked guy in the sport now? What happened here? Like, honestly.
I think there's a lot of people in that paddock who know that whatever was going on at Ferrari last year and the tail end of the year before, Vettel was not in a position to show what he could do. And now he is. And started off pretty rough. I don't think the first two races could have gone worse if he tried. But in the last two races, he's looked as good as ever. And he still keeps his finishing record of a minimum of P4 around this place.
Yeah, sheesh.
Oh, one more. I mean, we got to talk a little bit about Gasly as well here. I mean, man was nursing a power unit problem the entire second half of the race, and yet again, Pierre Gasly finds a way to get on the podium. It's the third season in a row Gasly has gotten on a podium in a car that had no business being there.
However, this weekend, despite that power unit fault, this weekend was a banner weekend for Honda in Formula One, if not in MotoGP. More on that later. we were heading towards a Red Bull Honda 1-2 with Gasly P5 at a minimum and Tsunoda P7. Tsunoda.
Yuki Hive is back, baby! P7! Let's fucking go!
Banner day for Honda, who are still on their starting power units. All the Mercedes and Ferraris have changed. But going down the main straight with a lap to go, Leclerc slipstreams and passes Gasly. Gasly gets back into a slipstream and drag races him down into turn one. And those two battle tooth and nail for the remainder of the first sector. Gasly's got some moxie to put the moves on Leclerc that he did.
But all he does is he just spends his time looking over the data sheets. He doesn't have that killer instinct at the wheel or whatever the fuck it was that Christian Horner said. Gotta say, though, great weekend for AlphaTauri. And we haven't even mentioned that Charles Leclerc got back-to-back poles. Although
His Ferrari teammate helped influence a red flag to claim it. Again!
Again!
Good job, Yuki.
They said, it's so rare, it'll never happen.
Next weekend. Good job, King.
Once again, I have been owned by Ryan King on this show, because last week I said it's so impossible that there's no way this will happen again back-to-back rounds.
Dre, you may pick up your L on your way out the door. Pierre Gasly is very damn good. And... Yes. He's making a case when that AlphaTauri contract is over. Maybe some top-level team should take a punt on him again.
Which is funny as well, though, because Alpha, like, Helmut Marko admitted he's got a 2-year option on Gasly at the end of the season. He sent it to the German press yesterday.
Well, they can always just start throwing more money at AlphaTauri.
Yeah.
Why not have 3 Red Bulls up at the front?
Why not? Why not? It's, you know, it's not a bad idea. Awesome. Before we get out of here for the F1 section, I've got to ask as well, did we like the 2-lap sprint finish? It was very NASCAR. It was very green-white checkers. And whatnot.
I wouldn't have bothered if they just decided to end this race under safety car. But, you know, I'm glad the
Massey
race
wanted to finish. He openly admitted he wanted to finish.
I didn't mind it, but to actually get a gauge on it, I think we need a bigger sample size than just one instance of it happening.
I don't think we're getting it next week, in our next round, because if you like chaos...
You see, Dre said that last week, and now we're in the same situation again.
We never learn? The best French Grand Prix since it came on the calendar, folks. You're welcome.
Oh, no.
That'd be real big, because considering this is the oldest race on the calendar...
The granddaddy of them all.
RJ, I want you to eat your own shorts if we get a good French Grand Prix next weekend. Look, if it's anything over a 7 out of 10, I demand this happens. Like, you're pushing fate here, my friend. Like, King, I want that in writing, and if it's a good French Grand Prix, that's the intro for the episode. Like,
oh, RJ literally eating a pair of shorts.
Okay, I got a selection of edible shorts here. It looks like I got a candy G-string, a juicy fruit
pair. I want it to be
shorts.
Made as fabric. We're not going down the candy OnlyFans road, okay? We're not doing
this. Get the Supreme shorts.
The brief jerky!
And on that note...
we are moving on. Thank you for listening. I'm going to go down this bottle.
Yeah, good idea. While Cam considers Alcoholics Anonymous, we'll get into the MotoGP Grand Prix of Catalonia.
All right. Be right back, folks.
Dear God.
In an upset for the ages, KTM's Miguel Oliveira followed up his second-place finish at Mugello with a brilliantly managed victory at Catalunya. Despite pressure from pole sitter Fabio Quartararo and Johann Zarco at the end, Oliveira controlled the race, one he described as, quote, the best of his career. However, the action was overshadowed by a bizarre incident with Fabio Quartararo. With 5 laps to go, his leathers ripped open, exposing Fabio's bare chest. Fabio then proceeded to throw out his chest protector and keep going, also gaining a 3-second time penalty for cutting the first chicane. Fabio then received another 3-second penalty after the race for not riding without his chest protector. It dropped him from 3rd to 6th in the final results. Fabio said after the race, "What happened, I don't know. I just know that I had the leathers completely open in the first corner with 5 laps to go. I tried to just put it in a normal position again. I couldn't do it. So it was difficult to ride, but unfortunately it happened." Alpine Stars, Quartararo's equipment manufacturer, is also said to be investigating the matter. A day on, Fabio admitted that he probably should have been black flagged for, quote, incorrect behavior. So, folks, I'm going to turn it to you. Did the steward's punishment of Fabio's chest protector toss fit the crime?
Fuck no!
Nothing will fit the crime of RJ stripping in the middle of a podcast, first and foremost.
This is King head in hands.
He wasn't the only one, trust me.
Holy fucking shit, this happened. We watched a MotoGP rider a week after we just lost a Moto3 rider ride around bare-chested, throw out their protective chest armor, and then continue to ride around for the remainder of the race at full speed without even zipping their leathers back up. Holy shit.
I said it on Twitter. I've been watching bike racing for 20 years. I have never, and I do mean ever, have I ever seen that happen before. That is a once-in-a-lifetime moment right there, folks. That just doesn't happen. Look.
And Alpine Stars did also issue a statement today as of recording that there was nothing wrong with Fabio's race suit.
So what the hell happened then? That doesn't explain anything. It's just, how was it? How did it happen then? It's like, oh, nothing wrong with the suit. That doesn't explain what happened, does it? Thanks, Alpine Stars. I mean, that's very useful of you.
Well, they weren't trying to explain what happened. They were just trying to say, yeah, wasn't us. Don't know what happened. Wasn't us.
Blame someone else.
The blame potato just was thrown in this corner. Now it's in this corner. Now it's in the other corner.
No, Fabio was just trying to appeal to all the people out there that were watching for the eye candy. No, look, I said it on Twitter, I'll say it again, he should have been parked. There is no doubt in my mind about this. This was extremely dangerous, all jokes aside. You may not have seen the race, you may not have seen it, there was a moment where RJ talks about where he cut the chicane, he lost the front of the bike. He very nearly crashed while trying to adjust his levers. If he lands chest first, that track is turning him into a cheese grater.
Yeah. If Fabio goes down chest first, he dies. That's where it begins and ends for me.
Yeah. It's a horrendous potential disaster. And not even did he try to fix it. And obviously tried to continue. He was still fighting Jack Miller for a spot on the podium in the last four laps of that race. That was an intense fight.
I wonder
what
was going through Jack Miller's mind too. It's just like, hey, dude, your jacket. Why are you fighting me so much?
Apparently Miller was like, I'm not fighting him that hard because I know he's getting punished for cutting the chicane, which he was. They were told before the weekend, if you cut the chicane and don't drop a second of time, you will be hit with a 3-second penalty, and that's exactly what happened. Yeah. So Miller knew. So he was like, I'm not going to fight him that hard because I know I'm getting the third anyway, basically. But it was bizarre.
It was blatantly it was flagrantly unsafe.
Yeah. And the fact that the stewards got to ride with that for five laps and not pull out a black flag is
no, they didn't
alarming.
Even, they didn't even investigate him during the race.
No, I just...
This is unbelievable.
Like, I said it on... Again, I said it on Substack, I'll say it here. These stewards are not fit for purpose if they missed something like that. That is terrifying that... At no point did they consider just straight up black flagging him and saying, look, you've got to park it, not just for your safety, but for the safety of your fellow competitor. It's not safe for you to be on a motorcycle track bare-chested. That just goes without saying. The fact they threw him a token 3-second time penalty after the race for it doesn't solve that fact. It's pointless. It doesn't change anything.
And that response, that viewpoint from us was universal. Everyone in the media said he should have been black flagged. All of his fellow competitors said he should have been black flagged. He himself the next day said, yeah, I probably should have been black flagged. Although since then, he's now taken the approach of, oh, well, if you were riding with your leathers open, you wouldn't want to be black flagged either. I'm like, it's a flagrant safety issue. We just lost Jason a week ago.
Yeah.
Through a type of crash that is fairly unavoidable when it does happen. When a crash plays out the way it did with Jason, usually it's the worst.
Yeah.
This was avoidable.
And just hours ago, we saw Ayumu Sasaki get clipped in the head, and thank goodness he's okay with only a concussion and a broken orbital bone.
Yeah. Potentially. More on that later. But it's just... We wouldn't continue racing if there was an inherent safety fault with the track that we could easily rectify.
Yeah.
So why was
we had to run the shitty chicane that nobody likes after Luis Salom passed away at this very track?
Yeah. Why do we allow a rider to compete for five laps with their safety equipment ineffective? No longer. If he goes
he
down,
tossed it.
If he goes down. Assume the worst.
Yeah.
And he nearly did. That's what made it even more scary. He nearly did go down. And the first thing we saw was the video replay of him literally chucking his chest protector away. I'm just like, what is going on here? It was terrifying to watch in real time as it was going on, because again, this has never happened before, and seeing it as it happens was just utterly terrifying. And yeah, I could only echo what Cam is saying. He should have been parked immediately, and the stewards need their heads wobbling. Seriously, that is literally and your job to ensure the safety of the riders, and you've failed exactly. at that job if you are letting Fabio ride with that chest exposed like that. Yeah. You have, like, Freddie Spencer needs to be ashamed. You're a fellow rider, Freddie. You should know about what this is like. Like,
yeah.
They should all know better. This is ridiculous.
And the point had come up in discussions about not wanting to affect the title race.
My cynical brain led me towards this path, that if they black flag him, there's a potential that Fabio Quartararo could lose a championship by as many as 16 points or less because of a wardrobe malfunction. And cynically, I thought MotoGP stewards did not want to have that happen.
You're not the only person to bring that up, however, to which I respond with this. If they didn't see it, they're not fit for purpose. If they thought it wasn't a big deal, they are not fit for purpose. And if they decided to not significantly punish him because they were scared of it affecting the title fight, the MotoGP stewards are not fit for purpose.
Yeah. And I don't even think that was going to impact it anyway, because Fabio Quartararo clearly is the one rider who has a bike that looks like it wants to win a championship, and the rider who actually looks like he wants to win a championship. He is clear odds-on favorite. He would have come away with the points lead in Montmelo anyway. It would have been slimmer, but he still would have had the points lead. And there's plenty more rounds where you can go pad that lead.
Yeah, it would have been a minor L for Fabio, because Miggy at the moment is not a threat, and the only one who is in front of him was Johann Zarco, who was second on the day.
And I got to see Johann Zarco win a race before I start considering him a real title threat.
Yeah. Right. Six career second places for Johann Zarco now.
He's going to break through one of these days.
He must be getting real sick and tired of not winning. It's like, not again! Like, how many times? This time it's the KTM, for God's sake. I didn't mention the list, but shout out to Miggy, because he's ridden superbly the last two rounds.
That new KTM frame. Sweet damn.
Dang, what did you do to it?
I didn't do anything. I was like, guys, more orange.
You know, that's there it. You know, it's known that another layer of paint does help in chassis rigidity.
Of course. Who the fuck it? Well done, Miggy. Again, said it before, one of the most underrated guys in all of the sport. He's such a classy rider. And I'm glad he's bringing KTM back up to the table, because he's a damn good world-class rider. Speaking of guys that aren't in a world-beating outfit at the moment, Cam, tell us about your mans. In your own time.
Oh, this next dear segment's about God, Honda Racing Corporation. Well, Honda couldn't have chosen a worse time to have arguably their worst weekend of the season, with Honda corporate executives, and that is Big Honda, that is parent company Honda, advisors watching in the garage, Marc Marquez and Paul Espargaro both crashed due to low sides during the race, Taka Nakagami having difficulty keeping the bike on the road, and suffering long lap penalties as a result. Paul Espargaro was very vocal, along with the other riders, during the week of how poor the bike currently is, even suggesting that the team needs concessions to save their bike, which would mean no rider from theirs gets at least a second place on the podium finish this season. Quote from Paul reads, "I would not be ashamed to have concessions, and to be honest, we need them right now because we don't have test days. I have only done 5 days of testing this season, which is nothing. The bike is not at the level that all of us would like, and next year we will have the same test days, and we will continue to be in the same difficult situation where we are now." I pitch this to you. Should Honda just give up on this year, go all in with concessions on 2022? And more importantly, should Alberto Puig be fired?
It's like, damn, they Honda was not playing around. They brought brought Soichiro Honda's ghost back to try and slap Puig around. That's what it felt like to me.
It's a strange one, because Marquez said he was having the best 7 laps he's had this season, and then completely went down in a freakish manner at turn 10, out of nowhere. It was like, oh, for God's sake. Like, it's the first time in his MotoGP career he's crashed at 3 weekends in a row. That's never happened for Mark Marquez.
And he was fast up to that point. He was carving his way through the field.
He was running with the leading group.
In his own words, I felt like Mark again. And then he lost the nose and crashed.
Yeah, it's like the weird thing is, according to Cam's question, is that the problem for Honda is if they're even thinking about concessions, the next round on the calendar is the Sachsenring, where Marquez has won for 10 years in a row.
He's never lost.
Undefeated.
He has never lost at the Sachsenring, and it's the perfect track for Marquez. We've talked about it before. It's a clockwise track, but really it's more anti-clockwise. A bunch of left-handers, suits the dirt tracking training that he goes through. Honda might be too good to fail in this instance, because like that might be Marquez's one shot at a win this year. Like, he's lucky in the sense that Honda have got... They've got a 5-week summer break after this round as well to consider. That will help.
It's a long summer break. The issues with the bike at this point are intrinsic. They've got an issue right now where the bike needs... It stops really, really well, and it turns in quickly. Every other aspect of the bike is a broken tire fire.
And now Mark Marquez can't ride around those problems at
that moment. I wouldn't even say that, because Mark was riding around them pretty damn well for the first 7 laps of that race.
Yeah.
The issue now for Honda is that they've got a bike where you need to hammer the front tire into the ground to make it work going into the turn. But they don't have the rear grip to support that. They've got a bike where you need to be incredibly aggressive on turn-in and through the corner. But they don't have enough rear grip to let you be aggressive without crashing the bike. So the bike can't be ridden in the way that needs to be ridden to be fast. Mark is trying to tie the thing in knots, trying to make it work, and he tips it into a turn on the brakes, his typical Marquez style of beating the front tire into the ground. The rear wobbles, he catches it, the front goes down. And unlike in the past, it's not a slide you can see coming. It's not a slide that Mark could traditionally save in the past.
You know what I think Honda should do? I think they should put some spider tack on the rear wheels just to get that extra grip.
I think they should turn
it
on
V-tack. If it works for Garrett Cole, it's good enough for everybody.
But and their point is that there's no way to make major changes with the bike. And we, by all accounts, they are making a total architecture change for next year. Moving the engine around. New fairing, new aero, new everything.
Yeah, but they tested the bike on the day afterwards in the test, and Marquez did 79 laps.
But that was nearly this year's bike modified to kind of mimic what next year's might be. But when you've got Mark Marquez, Paul Espargaro, Alex Marquez, and Taka Nakagami all crucifying the bike publicly, and the only saving grace for the head of HRC's MotoGP program, because they had the head of World Superbike in there as well, is that the guys running World Superbike aren't any more competent, because they're not really doing anything.
Not all Alvaro Bautista's fault.
Well, no. Bautista needs to stop throwing his bike at gravel traps. The point stands, I think, Big Honda understands there is something needs to change in the management of this team, because the management doesn't work. This is the first round where really Alberto acknowledged that the bike is fundamentally broken. And
it took him a year and a half to realize that.
Yeah.
She never admits fault.
No,
never.
Honda needs to wake up and realize that this is not going to change without a major reshuffle. Whether it's the bike,
a year off the or the people, a year after committing £100 million to Marc Márquez and giving him the biggest contract in the history of sport.
That's another point. Mm. People talk shit about how the bike is tuned to Márquez, and he's just aggression and vibes. Well, look what the development of a year without Márquez did.
They were shit for 2/3 of the year. It only really was the final third when Alex Márquez started putting it together and Taka got a pole position at Aragon.
No, but a year without Mark on the bike influencing development, and the bike is the worst that it's been in the 1000cc era, and it's not even close.
Comfortably. I'm not sure if it's sackable on Puig, because I think a lot of the issues probably started from before he even got there, but something's got to give back here.
Well, someone alienated Danny Pedrosa out of the team, and Danny Pedrosa's doing a fine job of developing that KTM now, isn't he?
Imagine!
Grin, King, grin! You know, only 4 race wins in the last 2 seasons, you know.
Team Orange stands its short king of development.
And the point with concessions is to achieve concessions, you need to... You score a total of 6 points over the course of a year. A win is worth 3, second place is worth 2, third place is worth 1. Honda's on 4 right now because of Alex Márquez's 2 podiums last year. They basically can't score a second place or they will lose concession status for next year.
I said, I think with Márquez being as good as he is, that they might still be too good for that. And that could be a problem in itself, which is scary to say the least. But yeah, that'll do it for this week of Motorsport 101. Quite a quiet weekend, actually, for us, relatively speaking. We just got IndyCar in Detroit, haven't we?
Yep.
Out of the big three. IMSA, a bit of IMSA, who knows? You know, if something's worth talking about, maybe we'll crack a bit of IMSA. We'll have to wait and see.
Believe me, I wanted to talk about the N24, but it ended up not being the N24.
It was like the N4. But
Kevin Estra is a god.
He is indeed. But yeah, beautiful stuff there. And obviously, a beautiful tribute to Sabine as well. If you got a chance to see that as well, go out of your way to see it. That was awesome.
Her name was on that roof for the Manti car that won.
Indeed. Beautiful stuff. Right. Like I said, next week we'll talk about IndyCars. Bound to be exciting duel in Detroit. Keep an eye on Alex Palou as well. He'll be starting that with a 6th place grid penalty for race 1, which is bound to be interesting as well. Early engine change, believe it or not. So that rule's coming into play. So that should be interesting for the championship leader. But in the meantime, basically, you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on OnlyFans at onlyfans.com/RJ O'Connell after that performance earlier. We're on twitter.com/motorsport_101. If you follow our personal handles, you can at Harrison101HD, at CBuckley917 with a bottle, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. And you're on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio shows we do. You can upgrade to 10 for the video version and access to the Supporters Club, our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Thank you very much for watching. We'll be back next week. I'm now going to go off and celebrate with a bucket of ice cream because Aston Martin's back, baby. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley, really Ryan King, and RJ O'Connell. Until next time, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
You're not going to force me to drink more.